We're starting a brand new semester, starting a brand new 10-week study, which is theoretically only 10 weeks, but whenever you think about, well, we've got, special speakers coming in and special events coming in, so there's not always 10 weeks involved in it. In fact, I think my Wednesday night study that is supposed to be 10 studies has turned out to be only 6 this time, so it makes it real interesting to try to design, but this study is one that yields itself so that it can be either short or long, because what we're going to do in this study is to have Sunday night questions and answers. I think there's been a lot of interest in that, and I will be gone some of the weeks, and I will try to get some speakers to come up. I'll probably give them the questions, but this is the day for you to turn in questions. And so if there's some Bible question that you've been thinking about, then just take one of those cards that you'll find right there in front of you and write the question. You do not have to put your name on it, but if there's just something you've been thinking about, some verse in the Bible, just something you've been wondering about, and as far as I'm concerned, there are no bad Bible questions. I mean, the worst Bible question is, out of what kind of wood did Moses build the ark? What's your answer to that? You weren't listening if you said gopher. I said, what kind of wood did Moses build the ark? Moses never built, somebody caught it back there. That's great. And so, so there are no Bible questions. And also I make this thing, and it's never happened, and I hope that it never's happened, is to ask a question so everybody in here knows who they're talking about. What do you think is the responsibility of the spirituality of a man who wears a blue shirt to worship? Everybody looks around and see who's got a blue shirt on, you understand. And so sometimes individuals would take advantage of this to hit out at somebody, and that is not what Bible class teaching is all about. And for sure, there's a bully pulpit that sometimes preachers use. We never have any desire to do that at all. But if there is some Bible question, now we haven't done this, used to do it on Sunday night, and when we started this study on Sunday night, it was interesting that I thought it would last about 6 weeks or something, and it went 10 years, I suspect. There was just always interest in when we would do this. And so Kirk Cruz, who's now heading up the adult Bible class program, doing a lot of the arrangements, says, Dan, how would you feel about doing questions and answers? And I love doing it. I really, really do it. Because let me tell you why. Sometimes preachers have to decide, Bible class teachers have to decide what would be interesting to people. I know what will be interesting to you if you tell me what you want to have discussed in here. And I find this really, really good. And so here's what we're going to do today. I'm going to do in a generic way to talk about some questions that always come up, and they all have to do with the end times. Questions like, what is the tribulation? What does the Bible say about the tribulation? If you have any religious discussion with any of your friends, for some reason, they are obsessed with that. And then, is the end of the world at hand? And so many people believe that, do they not? And so I want us to look at some of those verses that discuss this. And I hope it will be of interest to you. Today I'm picking the questions, and so I'm dependent on you to write down those questions and hand the cards to me sometimes when you see me today. And that's what we're going to study. You are going to, if there's something you've been wondering about, does the Bible speak of anybody that has 6 toes? Did you know that that's in the Bible? I have no idea where, but I think it's 6 toes. It was 6 fingers or 6 toes. I cannot remember. I remember sitting in Fiji, and everybody's barefoot there almost, and the boy over there just didn't look right. I couldn't figure it out, and I finally looked down. He's got one too many toes. Now, wait a minute. If you've got 6 toes, nobody has told me about it. Just keep your shoes on, and I will not identify who that is. But let's talk about those things. And Buzz, if you want, can pull up Matthew chapter 24. if you'll put the first three verses of Matthew 24, and Buzz, I told Buzz, you're no David Sproul. When David would do this on Sunday night, David would always try to guess what verse I'm going to use. And so it was a contest between me and him for me to hide what verse I was going to use. And finally said, the Bible says in such and such, and immediately he'd throw this up there. So it's Matthew chapter 24. We want to look at the first three verses because this becomes the basis of the end time questions. And so you can look up on the screen because Jesus is leaving the temple. Now, if you've got your Bible open, you need to look back in chapter 23 because there is almost no paragraph division. Once you get to chapter 21, all the way through most of chapter 26, it's all happening one thing right after another, right after another, right after another. And so the context in which they said, what will be the signs of the end of the world? And that is in verse 3. If you're in chapter 24, is that down in, maybe it's in verse 2. Let's see. Yes, it's in verse 3, I guess. Tell us when these things will be and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world. Now, it depends on what translation you've got here. But the translation that everybody used for so many years until some of the more modern speech translation became more popular maybe 25 years ago, everybody read this. And we use the expression, end of the world, end of the world, end of the world. And people go to this, and in my lifetime, every war there has ever been, every earthquake there's ever been, every tsunami there's ever been, every hurricane there's ever been, that's one of the signs the world must be about to end. Well, where are you going to read that? Well, Matthew chapter 24 talks about the end of the world. And so you've got to understand that we use that expression and we're not using it in the way the Bible uses that expression. And I'm going to show you that a little bit later. But if you've got your Bibles open, and really you need to have them open because Jesus is in the temple. In fact, he spake these things to his disciples, and he begins to talk about the Pharisees. And he says to them, he said, Matthew 23, verse 29, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Our dad did wrong, but I'm so much smarter than my dad. Anybody ever say that at all? Ever have that feeling? Ever felt like your children thought that about you? And they said, look, oh, they killed the prophet, but we're not like them. Jesus said, you've got these monuments to them. You've got these you got these tombs that are out here and you adorn them. But he says, woe to you. What's wrong with what they're saying or what they're doing? Well, what they're saying is a lie. And so Jesus calls them hypocrite, and that's what a hypocrite is, isn't it? You know the Greek word for hypocrite? You know the sign for hypocrite? Mickey, show us the sign for hypocrite. I want you to look over here. Everybody look at Mickey over here. Here's the sign of a hypocrite. I love it. She does it this way. I guess I do it this way. But it comes this way. Here's what you want everybody to think you are. Isn't that a classic description of what a hypocrite is? It is more graphic than to talk about the Greek word itself and how that word was used. And so we would not have killed those prophets. And Jesus says, want to see what you really like? Want to see what you really like? He says, you are the children of your fathers. That was an expression used by the Jews to describe an individual. Barnabas was called the son of, depending on which translation, renamed him, son of exhortation, son of consolation. The son of describes the nature of the person. And that word of profanity is a mockery of your mom. You're the son of your fathers. You're like your fathers. And he said, now the proof of it, he says in verse 33, serpents, brood of vipers, how shall you escape the condemnation of hell? Therefore, I will send to you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may come the righteous blood of everybody that's been shed on this earth. And then he says, verse 26, verily I say unto you that all these things will come upon this generation. Abel is killed. How's God feel about that? You remember how he felt when Cain killed Abel? God reacted, did he not? And then to think of all of the prophets, almost every prophet he sent was mocked. Well, we wouldn't have done that. And Jesus said, you are just like your fathers. I will send you scribes. By the way, you see that word scribe? What's a scribe? Somebody write something. Here is a prophecy that the New Testament will be written. I will send you inspired scribes, not just ordinary scribes. I will send you inspired scribes and prophets, and affirmation that as the Old Testament existed in writing, so the New Testament. And then he says, what are you going to do? And so you just keep adding. You know this expression? I've had it up to, that's what God does. Fill up the measure of the wrath of God. Go ahead and keep pouring it in. And when you kill every one of the apostles except John, and when you've killed the Son of God, you've had it. And he said, all of the righteous blood shed on this earth, go back to verse 35, that all of this, their blood will be on your hands. Verily I say unto you, it's going to happen in this generation. And he's in the temple. And verse 38, he says, your house is left desolate. You think this is God's house? Not God's house. It's your house. God is not here, and it is a desolate house. Now, in chapter 24, he's going to talk about the abomination of desolation. He takes this same word and brings it over into chapter 24. And there, look in chapter 24, in verse 15, whenever you see, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by the prophets standing in the holy place. There's the desolation of the holy place. And so he says, your house is desolate. In fact, the abomination of desolation that Daniel prophesied about is about to come. Now, look at the beginning of chapter 24 and verse 1, and that is on the screen. He walks out of the temple. Your house is left desolate. And he went out and departed from the temple, and the disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And he said unto them, do you see all these things? Assuredly I say unto you, not one stone shall be left upon another. What's he talking about? What stones? These massive stones of the temple. Some of these stones weighed 20 tons. We got any construction? Jim Rogers, you've done construction. How much would those massive, and what would a 20-ton stone look like? 20 ton, isn't that 40,000 pounds? Somebody help me. 40,000 pounds. You think about, you see these 18-wheelers, you know, they're limited. I don't know what the limit weight on truck. Jackie, you know the weight limit on trucks? Okay. It's an 18-wheeler loaded as high as you can with rocks. And some of them were evidently 30 tons. Not one stone to be left upon another. One stone of what? One stone of this temple. Can you imagine the impact that had on them? And they said, Lord, when is this going to happen? That's the question they are concerned about. Now, keep your finger here and Buzz, just keep this scripture up here on the verse, but go to the book of Luke, Luke chapter 21. You've got the parallel account in the early verses of Luke 21. In the early verses of Luke 21, he said, verse 5, Luke 21, verse 5, then as some spake of the temple, how it was adorned and with beautiful stones and decorations, he said to them, these things which you see, the days are coming in which not one stone will be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. So they asked him, saying, Teacher, when will these things be, and what signs will there be when these things are about to take place? What things? Not one stone being left upon another. That's the question they are concerned about. And I know they use some other, in Matthew, they use some other phrases, but Luke did, Theophilus, to whom Luke was written, did not have Matthew. If you just had the book of Luke, what would these signs found in Luke 21 be? Signs, if you're just reading Luke's account, signs when not one stone, the second coming is not mentioned at all. Isn't that amazing? They didn't ask about the second coming. Give us the sign when these things are about to take place. Now then, Mark has the same thing. Look at Mark chapter 13. And that's why you have, the gospel accounts in all of these by different emphases that are found. Verse 1, as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, Teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answered and said to them, Do you not see these great buildings? But not one stone shall be will be left apart another upon another, which shall not be torn down. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, look at the question, verse 4, tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign when all these things will be fulfilled. Tell us, Lord. Give us the signs when these things are going to happen. Tell us the signs. Isn't that amazing? Neither Mark nor Luke mention the second coming. Isn't that remarkable? So if you've only got Mark, or if you've only got Luke, then every one of those signs, now listen to this, if you only got Mark and Luke, then every one of those signs was a sign when the temple would be destroyed. You still in Mark? Let me show you something really, really important. In Mark's account, Mark describes where he was and who heard him and who was involved in asking this question, and who received the answer to this question. Go back to Mark chapter 13, verse 3. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, opposite the temple, Mount of Olives was on the mountainside, the Mount of Olives that overlooked the whole temple area. If you're on the top of the Mount of Olives, you could look over the wall and you'd see the temple. It'd be the most dominant building you would see. And so he's opposite the temple. Peter, James, John, and Andrew ask him privately, saying, when's this going to happen, and what will be the signs when these things happen? Now, that's the context. Now, let's go back to Matthew. What do you do about the fact that you've got what some people call the second coming here? What will be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? Now, if you've got any translation other than the King James, the old King James, you don't have the word world there, do you? What will be the sign of the end of the age? That's different. The end of an era. The end of a specific period is not the destruction of the earth. in English, when people talk about the end of the world, they're talking about the apocalypse, and they're talking about this earth burning up with fire because there's been an atomic nuclear war of some kind. That's what televangelists do with this passage, with this very passage. And so they say, what will be the sign of the end of the world? I remember, and Gary, you won't remember this because you were probably only 7 years of age. We were down at Gulf Shores. Remember, we went to the Gulf to see the ocean, some of those fears. I'm sitting in a Bible class and listening about like some of you are listening right now. And all of a sudden, the teacher read a verse. And I thought, I cannot believe what I just heard. I mean, you know how you read verses and you don't hear it? Let me read to you from Hebrews chapter 9. Now, if you want to mark your Bible, beside end of the world, write, look at, or see Hebrews chapter 9, verse 26. Hebrews 9, 26. Here is the verse that was read, and I could not believe it. Now, we were studying the King James, so I've got the New King James, what I'm reading from, so I'm going to read it, at least that one part of it, the very way the King James has it. He was talking about Christ and how, if his blood did not bring redemption by one sacrifice at one time and one place. He says, In chapter 9, verse 26, for then he would have had to have suffered often since the foundation of the world. But now once at the end of the world, he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Hello? When did Christ come? Once at the end of the world. I thought, that man can't even read good English. And I grabbed my Bible. I didn't even have my Bible open in that Bible class. And I looked at this, and all of a sudden, so many things began to fall in place. I mean, I understood. But now there is this evidence in the Bible. When did Christ die? What does the Bible say? Use the King James. When did Christ die? When did Christ appear? Not when did he die, when did he appear? He appeared at the end of the world. All of a sudden, we're not talking about the burning up of the earth, are we? And yet every time we use the expression end of the world, what are we talking about? End of time. We're talking about Jesus' second coming. We're talking about all of those things that are involved with that. And so the disciples said, what will be the signs of the end of the world? Well, wars and rumors of wars and famines and earthquakes and pestilences and everything that is involved. The end time, the apocalypse, Second World War, the Cold War, and now the threat of Russia and China against America. The world, the end's about to come to, there. You know, there's wars and there's rumors of war, therefore we know for sure Jesus is about to come. How do you know that? Because Jesus says that was a sign of the end of the world. What does the world mean? What does that word world mean? And the later translation, I think without exception, every one of them says, what will be the sign of the end of the age? He's walking out of the temple. He's walking out of the place where there is the holy place and the most holy place. And he says, not one stone of this holy place will be left on top of the other. And they said, Lord, what will be the sign of the end of the age? Isn't that a remarkable twist to let the Bible explain difficult passages. Now, if you come to this, like, you know, I did, and when I was growing up, man, I've heard so many sermons about the end is at hand, you know, and got all of these wars, and when there's an earthquake anywhere on this earth, the televangelists just go bananas. Absolutely. And if you were in the Ukraine right now and all the devastations that's there, and you see all of the death that's there and these massive graves, well, Jesus said there would be signs like that before he comes back. Where did he say it? He's walking out of the temple. He goes over to the Mount of Olives, and they said, what will be the sign when all these things happen? What will be the sign of the end of the age? Now, what about the coming of Jesus? You and I, when we talk about the coming of Jesus, we use it in a way that the Bible uses it, but the Bible also uses the coming of Jesus in another way. Look in Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10 is where he sends out the apostles, and he sends them on a limited commission. Now look at verse 23. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. Matthew chapter 10, verse 23. You flee to another city, for assuredly I say unto you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. There can't be second coming. We're going to show in a minute that they preach the gospel to every creature. But you will not have gone on this limited commission, will not have gone to all of the cities before you even finish this commission that I've given to you. The Son of Man is going to come. How's that? Look in Matthew chapter 16. The latter part of Matthew chapter 16. Jesus is describing what a man would give in exchange for his soul. And so he says, what profit is there, starting in verse 26, Matthew 16, 26, what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul, or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of His Father with His angels, and He will reward each according to His works. Verily I say unto you, there are some standing here who will not taste of death till they will see the Son of Man coming in His kingdom. That's got to be first century. Unless you've got some folks that are 2,000 years old on this earth. Jesus said, I'm telling you, you will not have died. You will live long enough to see the Son of Man coming. That's a different coming, isn't it? That's not his coming at the end of time. That's another coming. How does Jesus come? Let the text say, tell you, coming in his kingdom. When the kingdom of Jesus came, they were seeing the Son of Man coming in His kingdom. Now what we've done, we only use the expression coming, second coming of Jesus. We only use it to refer to His second coming. But here are two places in the New Testament where before Jesus ever talked about His coming in Matthew 24, He talks of it in two places. You will not go on through all the Jewish cities till you see the Son of Man come. And then you'll see Him coming in His kingdom. And He talks about His coming twice. And the two times that we've looked about has no reference at all to His second coming. What references are there to the second coming prior to Matthew 24? You get to Matthew 25, sheep and goats, right hand, left hand, wise and foolish virgins. you know, when the Son of Man comes. We got second coming there. There's no question about Matthew 25 about that being, but that's not happened yet. He's not even mentioned this. And so the question that they ask is, Lord, you are coming in your kingdom. You told us that you were coming in his kingdom, and what will be the sign of your coming? How will we know when the kingdom is coming? And so Jesus says to them, let's get back to Matthew 24. And Buzz, if you'll go to Matthew 24 and put up at least verse 5 through 7 or something like that of Matthew chapter 24, let's look at the verses that follow this and look at what Jesus says to them. Look at Matthew chapter 24. As Jesus answered and then said, take heed that no man deceive. You see that expression? You. What kind of pronoun, to get back to grammar, what kind of pronoun is the word you? Now, I'm not talking about the is it singular or plural? In Florida, you can mean singular or plural. You know, you will be leaving this building within the next 2 hours. You, what did I say? That's plural, you know. You forgot to comb your hair this morning. That's singular, isn't it? Now, if you understand English as it could be, should be understood, there's a way to say you and make it plural, and that's you all. Now, if you really want to hear it plural, it's y'all. And if you really, really want to make it plural, it's y'all all come. Guess what? This is the plural word. Take heed that no man deceive you. Wait a minute. What kind of pronoun is this? Is it first person? First person is I and we. Third person is he or she or it or they and them and those. Second person. First person, I'm talking about myself. Third person, I'm talking about others. Third person is talking about others. And second person, I'm talking to the person I'm looking right at. Who is he looking right at? Remember Mark? He goes to the Mount of Olives and there are four guys who are there. Peter, James, John, and Andrew. And Jesus said to four men. Now they're the ones who asked the question, what will be the sign of thy coming to the end of the world? What will be the sign when all these things come to take place? He said to them, take heed that no man deceive you. For many will come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. You who? You know, there's not some special code that God's given us to read the Bible and to understand it. God's not just trying to make you flip your head upside down, not use your brain at all. You remember in the Wheaties box years ago, you got a code ring. Did you ever get a code ring? Remember that years ago? And there'd be a code message on the backside, and when you open up your Wheaties box, or maybe it was Snap, Crackle, and Pop, I'm not remembering sure, but you had a code ring, and it was your own private code ring. You twist that thing around, and you'd read that special coded message. The Bible is not written in coded message. He's talking to four individuals, and he says to Peter, Andrew, James, and John, you will hear of wars and of rumors of wars. Isn't that amazing?
you who? If Jesus had been talking about us, talking about anybody other than those four men that were there, he said, and there will be wars and rumors of wars. That's not what he says. He does not say, and they in the 21st century will hear of wars and of rumors of wars. That's not what's discussed. He's looking at four individuals, and he says to Peter, Andrew, James, and John, you will hear of wars. I want to ask you this. Did Peter, James, and John hear about the Second World War? Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? The wars and the rumors of wars. And then having mentioned the fact that you will hear of wars and rumors of war, he says, but he says the end is not yet. What will be the sign when these things are about to happen? Well, before it happens, before the end of the, you want to put the word age there? Before the end of the world comes, before the end of the age comes, there's going to be turmoil, there's going to be wars and rumors of wars, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrow. Peter, Andrew, James, and John, nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom, famines, earthquakes, and things of that nature are things that are going to happen in your lifetime, in the first century world. But he says, don't worry about it. The end is not yet. Well, when will the end come? Look down, if you have your Bible open, and I'd circle the word end in verse 3, the end of the world. And I probably would circle the word beginning because it's the opposite of the end. It's the beginning of sorrow. Wait a minute. Before we get to verse 14, look at verse 9. Then they will deliver you up. You who? Peter, Andrew, James, and John. They will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. And you, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then will many be offended. You won't be offended. You're going to give your life. But now it's third person. While you are being killed, there will be many who will be offended and will betray one another and will hate one another. Then, many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because of lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end will be saved. Peter, Andrew, James, and John, you're going to give your life. But he, who while we're having the wars and the rumors of the wars and many are being offended, there are those who are going to stay steadfast, and he who endures to the end will be saved. Keep it in context. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world for a witness to all the nations. And then look at that. And then what's going to happen? The end will come. The end of the world will come when the gospel is preached to all the world. Isn't that amazing? Then the end will come when the gospel is preached to all the world. Has the gospel ever been preached to all the world? Televangelists, I remember hearing one a few years ago. Now that we have satellites, and man, you can be in the middle of Africa and you can have a little radio, and that was before the days of smartphones, you know, but you'd have your little radio, and with that, you will be able to hear, and everybody on this earth, for the first time ever, everybody on this earth is going to be able to hear the gospel. And therefore, the end, Jesus is about ready to come back. That's one of the signs. when the gospel, when we finally get the gospel to the most remote place on earth, now we're able to do it. Never been able to do it, but now Jesus is about ready to come back. Look at Colossians chapter 1. I want you to hear what is stated here. It's stated more than once in the Bible, but go to Colossians chapter 1 and hear the divine record when he says, if indeed you continue in the faith. That's Colossians chapter 1, verse 23. Remember, many will not continue. Many will not be faithful to the end. If you will continue in the faith, grounded and steadfast, Colossians 1, 23, and are not moved away from the hope of the gospel which you have heard and which was, past tense, which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, am a minister. Was the gospel preached to every creature under heaven in the first century? And the answer is absolutely yes. We said tribulation. Let me look at it. And then I'm going to let you make the comments. I'll let your mind make the comments, whatever he says. Pray, verse 20, pray, Matthew 24:20, pray that your flight, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, pray that your flight be not in the wintertime nor on the Sabbath, because then will be the worst tribulation there's ever been. Why do Peter, Andrew, James, and John need to pray that their flight be not in the wintertime nor on the Sabbath day? Because that will be the time when the worst tribulation there's ever been will come. God's had it up to here. Almost. You didn't kill the apostles yet, but it's, you're going to fill it up. What would you do if somebody killed your son? You know what God did? He brought the worst tribulation there's ever been on that nation that he had given the holy place and the most holy place and killed them everyone. Have to stop here. That's not a good stopping place, but that when you do questions and answers, you never find a stopping place. We may take this up the next time we study. Thank you very much.